This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
And welcome to a bonus episode of the show. It's not because we want to talk about the Leafs' losing streak, which is up to four games now after the loss to the Sabres last night. But we got a great guest coming up on our third period segment.
That's right. But before we get to that, we want to let you know some exciting news about our upcoming Leafs road trip to Stockholm, Sweden for the NHL Global Series. Folks, we have been granted NHL media access for the Global Series. So amazing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So this means we'll have media access to the games, team practices, the NHL Global Fan Tour, and the interactive activities that come with the Global Series. So we'll be bringing all of this to you, and we can't wait for it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's really amazing. This is our first opportunity to actually be up close and personal with the team and the players. And to be sure that you don't miss out on any of our road trip reports from the NHL Global Series, make sure you follow us across all of our social media handles, YouTube, X, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Our handle is at LTL1917. So do that right now. And because you won't want to miss anything. And a reminder that the NHL Global Series is on from November 15th to the 19th. So be sure to follow us now, and we'll keep you up to date on everything to do with the Leafs.
And before we get into the show, we are excited to also announce a new partnership with Bet Online. So you can find all the latest NHL game day bets, as well as props and futures. Currently, Bet Online has the Leafs at +275, right behind Boston to win the Atlantic Division.
And the last of the major pro sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. Bet Online remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NHL, NFL, college football, and UFC are all in full swing. Bet Online is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions.
All the pucks and hoops betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips, with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Please gamble responsibly, though. If you or someone you know needs support or advice, reach out to Connex Ontario or an organization near you. Place your limits and stay within it. And now it's time to get into our show. So our regular segments, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the highlight reel, are going to be back in our next episode. So we're going to start off the show with a Leaf talk about the games from this past week. And then for our third period segment, we are very excited to have two-time gold medalist for our Canadian women's hockey team and now broadcaster with TSN, Cheryl Pounder. Cheryl joined us to talk about the Leafs, the Sens, and the new PWHL that is starting in January 2024. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
Okay, so we're just going to do a quick review of the games from this past week, starting off with the Halloween game, and it was a scary one for the Leafs versus the Kings. It was a debacle, basically, is the only way to describe this one, 4-1 loss. Really, it was after a long road trip. It was the typical thing. They say that it's hard for every team to to show up, I guess, for that next game at home. And yeah, I mean, those are the ones, it's a grinded out type of game and you need something from your bottom six. It's good to have the whole team there, obviously, but it would be helpful if our bottom six would be a part of it and get us some production. And they just weren't there along with the rest of the team. Kind of felt bad for Joseph Wall in that game.
I don't think those goals were really his fault. Like, he was really hung out to dry for the most part. I was starting to wonder if the glare off of those LA helmets was just that much of a distraction and they just couldn't see. It's sad when we only could get back into it starting in the third period with a power play goal from Tavares. And then that's really all we could muster. So,
it wasn't a good night. Those helmets actually went well for Halloween, I think, too.
Oh yeah.
That's Halloween. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways. All right. And then, on to the Bruins on the Thursday night game. And, as I mentioned on our last episode, Brad Marchand did not disappoint, of course, with his antics, even though he is the captain of the Bruins now, in a 3-2 overtime loss to the Bruins. And there was all that hullabaloo about the no response from the team on the hit, the cheap shot, basically, or dirty hit that Marchand did on Timothy Liljegren. You shouldn't... They ended up having a team meeting about it, and I thought that was kind of ridiculous. I mean, like, why would, like, the next day, like, why would you, for a team, you shouldn't have to have a team meeting about something like that, right? I don't know. That's the way I look at it, but, like, it's, but then this team is still, obviously, it's still trying to come together. Like, it's still trying to form that chemistry, that bond, and we're only, 11 games in, I guess, now. So it's still a work in progress, but yeah, it wasn't a good look. And, the whole thing about Bertuzzi laughing, I don't think it was him laughing at his own teammate being injured. I think.
No, it was, to me, that was him laughing with a former teammate. It was like, that card Marchand, his antics, ha, 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 ha. Yeah. That's what bothered me about it. I didn't think he was laughing at Liljegren. I think that he was more laughing at Marchand, and it was more because they were teammates last year. And it goes back to the comments that he made prior to the game, because somebody, a reporter, asked him, what did you learn about Brad Marchand? And he said that he's a good guy, basically.
Right.
And obviously he's a funny guy. And that is the way he was laughing. But you know what? You're on another team now. Your current teammate just got carted off the ice. That's not the appropriate moment for that reaction, I don't think.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You know, like,
no, I mean, it was
for the non-reactions that they had, you know, right from JT being in front of the net. You know, Lily going down, and then he basically looks over and then he looks away. It's like, you know, so you have this non-reaction and then you have this reaction, and it all shows that they're not taking it seriously. And it comes from the top.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And speaking of, just like you were saying, Tavares looking at it, I mean, Wes McCauley, the referee that night, he was looking right at the play. Yeah. And not a penalty, like, not even too, like, it was blatant. It was blatant that it was a can opener. Like, and
I will say that, you know, in the full speed moment and the angle, I mean, we're not there. So maybe I'll give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there, because there has been some debate from various sources whether or not this was like a bad hit, illegal hit, whatever. But yeah, like, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's Brad Marchand dishing it out.
Yeah. And so it's him. Yeah. He gets,
it's not like there's no history there either.
No. Yeah.
So,
I mean, they did get the point. So that was good.
And they came back in that game, and really, truly. And I know they've said this before, and I do believe that is the case. That's their DNA, that when the chips are down and then they get upset, they like to show it on the scoreboard. But even in that game, it was too little too late because we didn't win. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So,
All right. Well, let's move on. To the Sabres game last night with, Austin Matthews getting another hat trick, but it wasn't enough. 6-4 loss to the Sabres. That was just so, it was so back and forth. It was ridiculous the amount of times that Matthews would score and then the Sabres would tie it up or go ahead within the next couple of minutes. Like, it was just, and again, you just clearly saw the separation in the top heaviness of our team with all the scoring being done by our top core four players and nothing from the bottom end.
And the other part of it is there's no separation in the defense because the defense is all crap.
It was awful.
It's not like we even have, you know, a couple of shining moments from the defensive core to point to. Like, there was no defense in that game. Period. It was just awful. Everything was in disarray when the gameplay moved back into our D zone.
The main reason why it was horrible though is because the bottom pairing of the two Marlies players at Lagesson and Lajoie, I think it was Lajoie that played like less than 5 minutes in the game, the whole game.
Actually thought they played well, those two, for the most part.
They were never on the ice. And that's why the top four were so dead tired, because they've been playing other games. We were down to 5D, right? Like with the previous games. So
exactly.
Eventually,
so why bring those
guys
up if you're not going to use them?
Yeah.
Play with four.
Exactly.
If they're playing 5 minutes. Yeah.
No,
or
I know.
If you don't trust them, pair them with other people. Don't put them together. So that's definitely on Keith as far as the makeup of, you know, who he's putting out there is an issue as well.
Yeah, because that's basically why I think the D was just horrible and looked like they were in disarray all the time, because they were just playing too much, the top four and the other two guys, and then the bottom six of our team is on the forward group. I don't know if they don't have the commitment to the defense yet, or they're just still learning about the system, but,
they don't got it. And
they don't got it right now.
That's for sure. And, it's also Keith putting them out at certain times. Like, you know, why are some of these guys playing in like the final minutes or right after a goal? Why do you have that line out there? Why are they playing so much in some instances? You know, like the times where they put them out, like he must know that we're not Vegas yet, where you can just roll four lines and know that you're going to get something out of all of them.
Yeah.
You know, Reeves has been like a huge liability in those moments. So you have to know where to put your players, not just so that aren't going to cause an issue, but also to put them in a position where they're going to be successful. And that's not it when you do that.
Yeah.
You know, how does that make them feel, where they basically are caught and scored on all the time? Like,
no, I know. Then they get lack of confidence, obviously. It hits their confidence. I mean, they better turn around soon, because they got Tampa rolling into town on the Monday. They got like the two divisional games again now. So they've lost two, Boston, Buffalo. Now they got Tampa and Ottawa coming up on Wednesday night. And then they got the Western teams. Vancouver's on a roll. And I knew that something was wrong on yesterday, because I picked Elias Pettersson to score on my Tim's picks. And then I picked Bertuzzi and Nyes, hoping that every time I do it with Tim's picks, I'm just hoping that those picks will somehow work to give some magic to those players. And it was Pedersen that did the job for me. So that's something wrong there.
Well, it could be Monday night because I don't know if you saw the lines in practice, but they have Nyes up with Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. So we're going to see what the kid can do up there. And I'm hoping that that is, that's going to click nicely.
And I hope it's only not just for the first period.
Yes. Yeah, he's got to give these guys a little bit of time, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so not that great for the last week or so. But they still got a little bit of time. But like you said, all of these, there's these other teams that are coming. And, you know, some teams like Montreal don't seem to be really letting up either. And we're going away to... you know, a foreign country to play a couple games. And then when we come back, it's Thanksgiving, American Thanksgiving. And that is really the quarter pole for the season. And if we're out of a playoff spot, that's not going to be looking too good for us at that point.
No, it won't be looking good for Sheldon Keefe either. I don't think.
And, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
But maybe the trip will be a turnaround. I don't know. It'll, one thing though, I will mention, at least we're not San Jose losing, giving up 10 goals, two games in a row.
Yeah.
At home. Oh, that I just couldn't believe it when I saw that last night. But
I talk about a team with no defense. Yeah. Oh, I feel sorry for Mackenzie Blackwood because it can't all be on him for sure. No.
Maybe Logan Couture will want to come, come play for us.
Yeah, I don't
demand
know.
A trade.
Well, I think he's hurt right now, which is part of the problem. So,
oh, he's not playing. Okay,
no.
All right. Maybe that's a problem then.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So we've unpacked a lot of stuff from the past week of Leaf games, and in our third period segment, our special guest, TSN broadcaster Cheryl Pounder, gives us her perspective on what she is seeing with the Leafs.
So for our third period segment, we're honored to have two-time Olympic gold medalist Cheryl Pounder.
Cheryl won gold for Canada with the Canadian women's hockey team in 2002 and 2006. And today, hockey fans can see her as color commentator on the CBC and for TSN for the Olympics and the IIHF Women's World Championships, and as an analyst covering games for the Ottawa Senators and Toronto Maple Leafs on TSN's NHL panel and on Trade Center broadcasts. Cheryl is also an in-demand motivational speaker, which I did not know previously, and the newly minted color commentator for EA Sports NHL 24. So that's quite the bio, Cheryl. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, ladies. It's awesome to be on here finally. I know we've been trying to make this happen for a while. So thank you for continuing to ask while my schedule has been a bit nuts with my daughters and the games that I'm working. So great to be here.
Yeah, no, it's really an honor to have you, and thank you for taking the time, definitely. Mm-hmm. So, so we're going to start off with a Leafs question for you, because we are a Leafs show. So they've played 10 games so far. Their record is 5-3-2. And we just want to get your thoughts on the new players, I guess, that Brad Treliving brought in over the summer to add some with toughness or snot, I guess, is what he said. So far, Sheldon Keefe hasn't found like a fit for either Bertuzzi or Domi. And we wanted to get your thoughts on what you think the problem might be like, and if it's just that they need more time to adjust or what it could be, basically.
Well, I think anytime you come into a new franchise, it's figuring out the underbelly of how that franchise works, the systems, the players, how you fit within the lineup. And certainly, you know that Tyler Bertuzzi, you know that he's that power forward, you know sort of what he brings. But I think as time goes on and you're not finding your footing and you know what you need to be doing in order to execute, but you're not finding that rhythm, you can start to force things. You can start to not play your game. And I don't think that Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner are the easiest guys to play with either, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of the thing is recognizing that it's got to be a fit, that there's chemistry there. There's an understanding of you're also playing for them. And I think sometimes you can get caught up in playing for others and forgetting what you do your best as well.
Yeah, that's true.
And so
yeah.
forcing play, overthinking your puck movement, all of those kind of things. So I think that there's an element of that as well, kind of figuring out the landscape of how those other individuals play, but balancing with it. Listen, there's something that got me here. It was how heavy I am below the goal line. It's my physicality. It's my separation from player from puck, because you know that Austin Matthews will scoop in and take that puck. So I think there's that element as well. And for Domi as well, sometimes you can get caught hesitating. So I feel like, you know, his feet haven't looked like they've been moving as fast because of those hesitations. And then all of a sudden that manifests differently because it starts to weigh on you, the expectation, the fan base, the coaching. Now all of a sudden you feel like you, well, you have been demoted in some sense in terms of your role on the team. And so now confidence takes a bit of a hit, and then you're finding where you're, where you best fit. So certainly I think there needs to be some time here. And I think Sheldon Keefe feels like he's given that time, but I don't think that experiment is certainly over with a player like Tyler Bertuzzi. I think that you've got to certainly massage it. You know why you brought him in. So I do think you have to give it some time. But yeah, in terms of a grading system, it hasn't worked as of right now. And also with Reeves, right? I mean, you can't play limited minutes and be scored on and spend a lot of time in the defensive zone. I mean, you need to be able to weather that storm, buy some time for those top guys to get back on the ice. And then again, if you want some snot, ladies, you got to bring the snot when the snot is called for. And I don't know whether that's deployment of the players or the coaching staff, because, you know, you got to be put on the ice to be able to make that happen. So certainly there's, you know, there's a lot of question marks around these players, but why is it that we're always talking about the new players coming in, not fitting? It may be on them, certainly to a degree. It's, you know, they're big boys. They have contracts. It's a business. But on the other side of it, there's a lot of players that haven't also worked that would have been expected to work. So I think it's not just looking at those three, but also looking at the staff, how they've implemented them, the structure, the players that they're aligning with. You know, there is a responsibility to figure it out and find a way. And I'm going to say that that's a collective issue.
I agree with you 100%. Like it's not necessarily just... It's not a one-way street where somebody new comes in and it's all on them to fit in. The other teammates, the people already there, have to help them fit in. It's there's got to be a relationship there. It shouldn't all be on the new guys. That puts all the pressure on them. Another question I have, like with Bertuzzi in particular, the last game, he was pretty much last two games actually, he was pretty much benched for significant parts of that, and then, you know, move to the fourth line as well. How long can something go like that go on, you know, as a former player, before it really derails you significantly?
Well, I think your maturity level in terms of how long you've been in the league and how you've learned to adjust and speak to your staff. And I think, you know, they're grown men. But there's always a confidence factor. There's always, and you know, when you're feeling it, when you see someone that's playing with, I say, the moxie, they've got the juice, they're jumping, you can sense that they're on their game. When a player's deflated and they start to second guess themselves, and certainly when you have a greater body of work, a greater strong body of work to reflect on, certainly it helps, because you remind yourself of, you know, when you had those seasons when you're scoring 20 plus 30, right? And what you were doing. And so you know you're that style of, you know you're that player that can bring that. You know that, you know, what you did in the playoffs last year. So you know that you can play a hard game when it matters. So you can reflect on those moments, which will help you through these moments, but it doesn't make it easy, right? Mm-hmm. Because the longer you stay there, the more that you get pushed down and you start to, you know, you just, you ain't happy, right? You're not happy.
Well, yeah, but I think we've
always said, when you get that next opportunity, you need to seize it.
Yeah, I think
you've got to do something with it.
Like,
but it's
saying,
not as easy as just going out there and playing awesome all the time. You know, your opponent has something to do with it. Your line mates have something to do with it. You know, your D have something to do with how you're getting the puck. But I think it's really just playing your game. And I think that's one of the biggest things that players forget to do when they're elevated. They stop necessarily doing what got them there, and they start playing just for, hey, I got to get the puck to this guy, or I've got to, you know. And so that will come naturally. But again, it's a synchronicity. It's figuring out where everyone's at and in the nuances of players' game. And sometimes it's a larger window, but you may not have the opportunity for that long. So yeah, no question, ladies, it wears on you. I do think because he's a little bit older, he's had a greater body of work. He can find his game again.
Yeah.
And some tough conversations, obviously, with his coach and staff. But you've just got to make sure that the player stays invested. And I think that's the big thing here because, you know, keeping him in a fourth line role is certainly not in the best interest of this team.
Yeah, no. Not a $5 million.
No, okay, well, that's it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so... Since you also cover the Senators, we wanted to get your thoughts on what happened this week with GM Pierre Dorion being fired, all of the fallout from after the NHL announced that the Senators are going to lose their first round pick because of the botched trade with Vegas with Evgeny Dadonov. So what is your take on what happened there?
Well, I mean, you have to be transparent, right? And I think that's one of the things that whether it's Stastny and Lauer coming in, they've been pretty transparent, pretty passionate, I would say, in their openness around this situation. The investigations, of course, that were happening, you know, saying that we wasn't 100% transparent. But in terms of Pierre Dorion, I mean... You know, there has to be an accountability piece and an accountability factor. So there's no question that something needed to give in terms of that. I do question the length of time that it took to be able to make this decision.
Yeah, that's
it's a crazy amount of time. Like, you know, and Ann Lauer suggested that it's, you know, how did it take that long to come to this conclusion in the 73-page report and now have a first rounder gone, which I think was pretty heavy. Now, listen, I recognize that you're setting the tone for this type of thing, but given the circumstances and given everything that's gone on within the NHL, it does seem pretty stiff. And you've got a new owner coming in going like, what gives here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's been this long. So I think that has been real tough for the Ottawa fan base coming in, recognizing, listen, we've got this team, we've got this young team, we've shored up our core pieces, which seem really strong right now. And now, you know, we're being fractured by, you know, first round pick gone. We're being, you know, the injury situation. So I think there's all of those elements that have sort of just come in heavy, and there's this cloud right now on otherwise what was a bright light coming into the season, and that's the best way I can put it. So it's, how is this big wind just going to come in and blow that cloud out so that these athletes can play? But certainly I think it's been a real difficult situation. I think it was a real strict, tough penalty. But again, in terms of Pierre Dorion, you know, I think the accountability piece here is, you know, the transparency around what happened. And they had to send a very clear message. And certainly in, you know, him not being the GM anymore was a message to the fan base, a message to everyone in Ottawa that this is going to be a very transparent, authentic group.
Mm-hmm. And do you think
it's certainly refreshing to see the passion and the way he spoke? And that's something we haven't really seen, you know.
I liked it. I really liked it. In this business, you know, you ask the same questions all the time and you get similar answers, and you understand why the diplomacy and the politics, and you understand. But then there's this freshness to this authenticity that he's generally pissed off, you know, and he's not hiding it, right? Because he wants everyone to know that this is what happened. And this is, and I like the passion. I like the fact that he's saying, I want to win with this group and you're giving me this hand with these reasons. And so I like that he stood his ground. I like that it wasn't status quo. I think that it sent a clear message that, you know, I'm here. I'm here for you. I'm here for the group, but I don't want to just be pushed aside either. And that's a pretty big tone setter when, you know, you're coming in as the new owner and, you know, and really calling out the NHL. And I think we don't see that happen. We don't see that happen at all. So I think it was very refreshing and authentic, and I don't mind it. It's just like, I don't mind, you know, Brady Tkachuk and Jacob Chychrun going at it, like demand excellence from one another, you know? Yeah. And I think there's an element of that with the Leafs sometimes that you wish you'd see, like demand it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it comes from the internal temperature of the team. And so, you know, it's not always the staff. It's comes from within as well. So demand it from one another. And so I thought it was real refreshing.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just found like you were like, yeah, you know, so, which was great.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to move on and we're going to talk about the new PWHL, the Professional Women's Hockey League, that's going to be starting up in January, which is very exciting for the women's game. And we just want to get your thoughts on, we know that the teams are still forming, I guess, but what teams or players should fans watch out for as the season gets going in January for the new league?
Oh, there's so many wonderful players out there that, you know, I think that the fan base are going to just gravitate towards. You've got a great head coach in Carla McLeod out of Ottawa right now. And of course, she's got Breanne Jenner there. So a leader on the national team, which I think that everyone can kind of gravitate towards, with a great technical goaltender in Emerence Mashmeyer. But Boston, ladies, Boston's going to be heavy.
Really?
Right? I mean, Boston is going to be Alina Mueller. She's on the international stage with Switzerland. But this is a woman who can score. She can distribute the puck. And I think that if you get eyes on her, you're gonna love her, as well as Lauren Gabel. You know, I've questioned why she hasn't gotten a better sniff with the national team, but she's got an unbelievable shot, arguably one of the best in the world. And that's pretty telling when you have a certain someone named Marie-Philippe Poulin playing in Montreal. So, you know, she can go toe-to-toe with her shot. So you've got Montreal, you've got you know, New York, all of these teams that I think are just going to garner just such an electric environment, because it is the best of the best. And when I often think about the different players in the league, it's not just, you know, your national team players that are playing here, right? There's players that are just coming out of college. You have Daryl Watts playing in Toronto. She was a Patty Kazmaier Award winner, who in NCAA, so the best in the NCAA, essentially, that award is. And she'll be playing out of Toronto with Emma Malte, who's one of my favorites in terms of a 200-foot game, one of the best sticks in the game. And she is just so great at keeping her feet moving. So, I mean, I could go on and on about the depth, honestly, but really excited and hopefully going to be able to broadcast some of those games. Keep your fingers crossed.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, because I think one of the greatest things now is the visibility. And I get asked this a lot. Did you think that there would ever be a professional women's hockey league? And, you know, when I was young, it wasn't possible because it didn't see it. And now my daughters, their friends, young girls playing the game now are going to see it. So on a regular basis, and they're going to aspire, you know, for those who want to be a part of it. And that'll be a long-term goal. Just like for young boys, it's the NHL. So I think it's pretty amazing. And I'm telling you, when September 18th, the draft, you could have pinched me 1,000 times and I wouldn't have felt it. I was just kind of in a bubble as I was watching all of some of my former teammates and alumni there that just came to watch because they just wanted to see it. For me, it was pretty surreal. I had to pinch myself that first pick in Taylor Heisey and just go, oh yeah, it's happening, which is pretty amazing.
Something just listening to you talk about it right now, like, it's just the fact that we're going to have players from all over the world gravitating and playing together on one team, which we haven't really had the opportunity to see. You know, like, we see, you know, best versus best, but national teams, but now we're going to, you know, you just mentioned a Swiss player, you know, like playing on a team with, you know, like players from North America. It's just, I don't know. It's really exciting. As you are the perfect person to have on to talk about this, because I can feel your excitement and I am now so excited to see it myself.
Yeah. It's, and what is it, what's amazing about it is there's an undercurrent of unbelievable talent in North America and in Europe. that aren't necessarily making their national teams, but that undercurrent is so good and could make their national teams, right? Mm-hmm. Like if there's a number of players that don't make Team Canada that I sit there and go, wow, like I'm surprised, you know, you're on my depth chart, you're higher than someone else, but you know, I'm not the staff. I don't create it, which is fine. Everyone has a different eye and it's a puzzle piece. As we know, chemistry, we talk about Bertuzzi, whether it would, you know, we talk about, you know, who fits in, who makes that better, and who likes to play with who, and all of these things that factor in. So these women, these young women, a lot of them younger because they're coming out of college, they have that opportunity now. Mm-hmm. And so in the prime of their career is not ending. Right, it is continuing. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we've seen these women in their prime at their very, very best, even though that's something to say when you've got Poulin's out there.
But, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's going to be exciting. We hope to get, we're going to get out to one of the Toronto games in January, hopefully the home opener, once the schedule comes out, and, and to our listeners too, make sure you get out there and support the team wherever you are. We have listeners in the States too. Go out and see New York and Boston
watch. People need to watch on TV.
Yeah. On TV. Well, hopefully we'll get, like Cheryl was saying, hopefully we'll get it on, get the games there on TSN or on the networks there. So,
So the last question we have for you. So we wanted to ask you about your own hockey career and your Olympic experience, particularly in 2002, where both the men's and women's team won the gold in Salt Lake City. Can you share any special memories that you have from that team?
Oh, there's so many memories from that team, right up from the most difficult year of my life athletically, because we never beat the Americans once until the final. we learned, right? We learned and we grew as a team. And I remember getting to the Olympics and just being reminded how amazing it is. But then we were there to do a job. We were there to put in our personal best performance. And stepping on the ice for the gold medal game was certainly something. The nerves, the energy, half of my family there, my brother running down 10 rows of people screaming at the top of his lungs, "That's my sister." I didn't even know he loved me because, you know, he always put me in net playing road hockey. And winning and coming over to my family, I think that was one of the most amazing moments. Of course, grabbing my beer, making snow angels over the Lucky Loonie, it was there. Yeah. And the first thing I did when I got back to my dressing room was the dressing room. Of course, I didn't want to lose the moment. And I think that sometimes we exit the moment so fast, and I wanted to hold on to it. So went back on the ice, stayed in my equipment, and I called home because my one brother and sister couldn't attend. And they were having a party, and I just called them to say, you know, we did it. And they were all bawling. I was bawling. I come out and everyone was screaming, and the national anthem started to play when we got congregated with our parents. And to be able to hug your family in that moment, you know, knowing what they put into it as well, because it's not just your dream, right? When you're a family, it's a family's dream, because it's so much effort and work and all of that to go into it. But it's funny. One of the fun moments was we went to the men's game the next day, and I was still wearing the clothes that I went to in my game. So it was one hell of a party, ladies. And I lost the group. I couldn't find them anywhere, you know, because we were all down in Salt Lake and, you know, we started together and then we got separated. And if you knew us, the women's hockey team, we weren't afraid of, we weren't afraid of a buffet line. And it was funny because the only thing that was open, and I'd lost everyone. I had my fiance was with me. And the only thing that was open was a Denny's, and we were starving. So I go, there, like, we got to go eat. So we walk in, and there is the whole team had found their way back together.
Oh, wow.
The only restaurant that was still open at whatever time in the morning. Yeah, and went to the men's game the next day. But I think so many lessons were learned in that year. So many valuable lessons. And we talk about maturity in the game and playing for one another, not just yourself. And that's how it really winds up being just a magical experience. So for me, if you could have stopped time within my career, I think I would have stopped it for a moment right there, just to stay in the moment and to appreciate not so much. I mean, obviously the gold medal, but the process to getting it. And so pretty unbelievable moment for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's for sure.
That's incredible. When
I was reading some of the articles, like, because it's been quite a while now, 2002, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I remember watching, like, the women's game, and then like the next night, the men's game, it's double gold. And I thought
And what's fascinating about it is that at the time we never knew anyone even watched, right? So I remember getting on the plane to come home back to Calgary, and flew back to Calgary, and then I flew back to Toronto. I had to move out of Calgary because as a group, we centralized. So we lived and trained together full time in that year. And I remember the pilot saying, "Would the women's team come off last?" And we were like, "What do you mean? Like, we're good. We're still partying. We got to get off this plane." And he said, no, you need to get off last. And we got off last, and it was like pandemonium at the airport. And we were like, "What? People watched? Holy crap!" And it's remarkable now that with the PWHL, and obviously me being fortunate to call a number of the Canada games and World Championship games, when you read the bios of the women now, their dream was born watching that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, you see the registration and the growth that increased after that, much like soccer in London. And it's pretty amazing that visibility, you know, changed Renata Faust, you know, it gave her that vision, and she came to our hockey school, my hockey school. So I am old, but again, you know, it's just showing you that in that moment, although we never knew it, the impact that it would have from it being visible. So it's pretty awesome that, you know, when I'm calling these, I get to go, and I read the bio. I'm like, oh, I actually played back then, but, you know. Where it was Angela James for me, and Mark Messier was my favorite. But now these women have you know, other women that they can see and say, okay, this is attainable.
Yeah, which is great.
Okay, so that actually moves us perfectly into the next segment that we like to do, a special segment with our first time guests. It's a little bit of a like sort of rapid fire sequence of questions just to get to know a little bit more about Cheryl, the person and the hockey fan. So are you game for that?
Okay.
All right. So Chris, start us off.
All right. So the first question we have is, when did you first fall in love with hockey, and what drew you to the sport?
Oh, I fell in love with it when I was probably 6 or 7, I would say. I didn't play till I was 8 because my brothers played, and my grandfather was GM of the Montreal Junior Canadiens. So we were a hockey family, and my brothers always put me in net playing road hockey. And I eventually turned to my parents and said, "I want to play. I want to play. I want to stop going to the rink to watch them. I want to play." And I was fortunate that my parents were open-minded enough at the time, because I am in my late 40s, that they said, "Yep, you know, why not?" And that's how it started. That's cool. And I do think I was tough. Because I had brothers that sort of knocked me down and weren't afraid to really give it to me out on the streets and on the backyard rink. So, but eventually I beat them up.
and did you play any other sports growing up?
I played everything.
Everything.
I was a softball player. My grandmother was a huge softball player in the 1930s, and actually had a contract for Wrigley Field in the 1940s to play in that professional women's league that's now coined after a League of Her Own. So I love ball. I was a shortstop. I had an opportunity to go to the United States to play. But at that same time, I had made the national team in hockey. So so I elected to stay with hockey. But I loved ball. Loved ball. Loved volleyball. Played volleyball. If there was a school sport, I played it. Right? They would come and say, "Oh, well, you know, we don't have enough. Well, Cheryl will play." I'm a firm believer in it still. Even the athletes I coach, and I coach at the highest level of the women's game right now, I believe that there is a real spot for, I don't want to take sport away from these young women. A lot of them play lacrosse. I think it's the perfect complement to the game. I think that it helps vision, it helps understanding, it helps IQ, because I think in many, many environments right now within the game, we're becoming very skilled. But the application of that skill is not always there, because there isn't that understanding of the breadth of knowledge around, you know, seeing, So I'm a huge proponent, again, still, of being multi-sport, especially up to a specific age.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense to me. And I wish more parents, took that on and basically, encourage their kids to play multiple different sports and not just focus.
It's passion, right? So I think, there's some kids that want to play 24/7 all year long, and there's some that they need a break and you to refresh, to heal, not use the same muscle groups, some of the injuries you're seeing. So for me, I think it's really important when you're young to be able to experience them if you want to and you enjoy them. And it's usually can be a different group of friends. Like it's just so important, I think, not to take it away. We see kids when they're 9 and 10 having a second sport taken away from them because they're being forced to choose. And I'm saying, I've got some that are playing dual right now and they haven't lost it. Yeah, maybe they're not as good in September and early October, but by November, but doesn't matter. So I think it's really important myself. But again, I think there are some that are just wired that they want to play all the time. And in that respect, that's okay.
Yeah. Okay. So growing up, what was your favorite team and who was your favorite player? Now we know you were born in Montreal, so we will forgive you if it was the Canadiens.
Well, it was not the Montreal Canadiens. It was the Edmonton Oilers. Because I was a huge Marc Messier fan. And I just loved how strong he was and his leadership and how he'd bowl down the ice and just, And it's interesting. So my brothers, one of my brothers wore 11, but I wore 11 and it was twofold. It was also for Marc Messier. So he was my favorite. So I jumped on the Oiler bandwagon, not just because they were so incredibly talented, but because he was my favorite player.
That's a good pick. I like that pick.
That's for sure. Yes. And who would you say was your biggest mentor in hockey and in broadcasting?
Oh, this is tough. I've got so many. I don't think I can give you one, ladies, and I know that's a cop out.
if there's more than one, welcome to.
In my career, it's tough because I think it changes, right? When you're young, I think it was my mom. My mom was my coach, which you find pretty incredible given my age. And she never played, but she was a brilliant hockey mind.
Right.
So I think my mom presented that opportunity and my dad was all for it. So I think, from that standpoint, I grew up in a family that allowed me to, and I do say allowed because at that time, not all families were on board with their young daughters playing the sport. And there wasn't the knowledge around it. There wasn't, there wasn't the same understanding. And so, having that open-mindedness, I think that there was a lot there in terms of that. Of course, as I walked through my career, my husband's been instrumental. He played the game. He's still a sounding board for me. We walk through scenarios. I'll tell him about something that I saw on the broadcast and he'll say, I don't agree with you. And we'll hash it out. So he's been instrumental and he played as well. So knows the game, understands the commitment. Always understood the commitment and sacrifice to being the best that you can be, and understands it now in broadcasting, if that makes sense, because the preparation, the work that goes into it, the video that goes into it, it's a lot. And the family structure changes when mom's out in the evening. And so having a partner that recognizes that has been unbelievable. And then when you get to the broadcasting world, honestly, ladies, I can honestly tell you that everyone from Cassie Campbell Pascal, who told me before one of my first broadcasts what was said to her, believe you belong. And those words have held true to me. And it's the advice that I now give to young women who reach out to me about broadcasting, because you have to believe that what you believe in your value and believe that you do belong, have the courage to recognize that you do belong there. So, the help that I've gotten from a former teammate has been incredible. Rod Black, the first guy that sat beside me in the booth and let me just learn and step on his toes and over talk and be myself. was incredible. And I walked through, you know, Ray Ferraro reached out to me 2 years ago saying, Cheryl, you need to be doing more of this. And me turning and going, oh my gosh, if Ray thinks I can do it, well, maybe I can do it. And whether it was Craig Button, you know, doing my first Memorial Cup or first World Juniors, so having no idea who some of these young athletes were and saying, you call me any day, any time, any moment, even if I'm about to go to air, and I will give you the skinny on all of them. Could be Dave Poulin sitting beside him on the desk and just him turning to me and giving me some input, teaching me the ropes of the first few times I was on the panel of, you know, this is how I do it, or this is how I prepare for a trade center. Mm-hmm. You know, because understanding how to prepare is a massive piece of being good at what you do. Mm-hmm. And then narrowing it down into what works for you. But when you don't have any idea, you know, you need great people around you to be able to help you, you know? So whether it was my bosses who gave me the opportunity or now Kenzie Lalonde, you know, we have a great team that we're surrounded by. And I know it's such a cop out, but I can't tell you how many times the truck has made us look good, or the producer or the director. And again, it's just such a team effort. And so for me, understanding that landscape, now having these pieces and these mentors and these teammates around me, allows you to elevate. So I'd say they're all colleagues that are mentors, because I can call them right now and say, I don't understand what the heck is going on with the defense structure for the Leafs, which by the way, I don't. So, right? And we can walk through it and throw ideas by one another. What system do you think they're playing right now? I'm like, well, it's a hybrid. What do you think? Well, I'm not sure because it's changing so often. I don't know whether it's because they're just playing it incorrectly or that swarm is what they're looking for. So again, you know, and so it's not just one person, because at different times it's different people. But certainly, you know, there's been a few that have certainly pushed me in that direction. And again, Ray reaching out to me 2 years ago, I don't know if I ever would have had the confidence to turn to my boss and say, okay, I'd like to do more of this. Let's have a conversation. Had he not pushed me.
Yeah. Well, some of those names are like, obviously they'll be definitely big mentors. And, I mean, we watch them all the time on TSN and it's, other networks.
It's people putting you in a position to succeed and wanting that to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think when we talk to young people, in whether they're in sport or whether they're in, you know, want to go into broadcasting or any job, you know, you want to, when you have that feeling that you're surrounded by people that want to help, in you gaining knowledge, learning how it works so that you can be successful, and then putting you into those situations at the right time, it means a lot, and it gives you that courage and that strength and prep in your own preparation to try and execute to the best of your ability. That makes sense. We all make mistakes on air, right? We all make mistakes, trip over our words, or maybe we didn't get the pack we really were looking for. You know, it's a dry game. You know, I just want to talk the D, you know, but again, it's when you surround yourself and you have these people that you can kind of lean on when you're not sure to work it out and talk it out. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Okay. So
that wasn't rapid fire, was it? That was pretty long.
It's okay. That's why I said it's like sort of pseudo rapid fire. It's just like more point, different
fire.
Kind of questions.
You're talking to the wrong girl.
So another question for you. So you wear a lot of hats, obviously, like you do a lot of different things. So like, is there like one thing that you may have touched on this already a little bit, but is there one thing that you'd like to do more of in the future? Or like, do you ever see yourself, you know, doing more within the coaching ranks, for example?
Yeah, I've always said with the coaching element, I don't want to really like, and that this could change, but if I'm not coaching my children, then I probably would step away from it because I don't want to miss what they're doing. You know, in terms of coaching and elevating, whether into the national ranks or I know NHL ranks or whatever, that's not on my docket right now. I do actually love what I'm doing. I love talking the game on the panel and having that conversation. I do love the booth. I think, you know, could be opportunity in that realm to do a little more within the booth. But right now, honestly, just given my children, their lives, being a little more stationary is probably a good thing, because they're 13 and 15 and I don't want to miss it either. So there's that balance as well. So right now I would say to you, I'm going to hold off on the coaching ranks. I'm probably not going to coach at all next year. Partially because my kids need to fly on their own and I want to watch them and be a parent. Yeah. And secondly, also because if you do and you jump into it at a higher level, then, you're in it, right? You're fully in it. So I'm hoping to stay on the panel, continue to do what I'm doing, maybe get a couple reps in the booth. And I think I'd like to get between the benches at least once.
That'd be cool.
At some point.
Well, that would be cool. I would love to see that.
Yeah. So that's sort of something I'd like to try and experience down at ice level. And I may get an opportunity at one of these upcoming rivalry series. So
see how I see it
from the ice level, especially because I'm not very tall.
All right. So the last question we have, just bring it back to the Leafs. We're going to close it off and just get your opinion on the Leafs as currently composed. Do you think they're better or worse this season from last season, I guess?
Oh, well, right now I don't see them being as strong. I think the defensive holes are pretty apparent to me right now, and the back end needs some
help.
Yeah, needs an upgrade. Again, that's where my eye naturally goes. In terms of that element, I think, obviously their forward group speaks for itself in terms of their core four when they're playing, but their bottom six depth and sort of the secondary scoring that needs to be there. I think there needs to be a little more synergy with those new players to find their fit, as we talked about in the opening of this, because they're going to be key elements to this. They've got to find a way to make it work. But again, I think you need an upgrade on the back end. No question about it. When you see some of these teams and how fast they are, if you're watching the Devils or you're watching the Avalanche, like the speed and the foot speed, from that back end needs to be elevated for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I agree on that. That's for sure. Yeah. I think we both agree on that. Defense is always a concern with the Maple Leafs for some reason.
Well, if you didn't outscore your opponents, it's one thing. But the problem is, like, when you got the Oilers that aren't outscoring, you recognize that you got to take care of it. And games get tougher, as in playoff hockey, how you defend becomes critically important in how you protect the slot. And so, below the goal line, being heavy down there, being physical, making people pay the price if they're going to get to the middle of the ice, and then just being decent with the puck, making a good first pass. And to get the puck going into the hands of Austin Matthews, right? You need the puck in their hands, which means you got to move it and you got to be able to get back to it first. And so that's going to be a key piece for me, because it does lead to the offense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, we want to thank you, Cheryl, for coming on, spending time sharing everything all about the Leafs, the Senators, I think, and the new Professional Women's Hockey League. Get out there to our listeners to support the new league coming up in January and some of your memories from that Team Canada team. It was great having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks
this was
me.
Beyond worth it. And we hope that we can, if your schedule allows, we would love to have you on again at some point in the future.
Yeah, no problem. I think it's great that you guys are so passionate about it and happy to come back and chat some more hockey.
All right. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thanks, ladies.
So thanks again to Cheryl for joining us. It was a great discussion with her.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, you could, I mean, it was, the whole thing was great. She gave us a lot of input on the Leafs and the Senators and how, being a former player, how she sees the games and what's going on with each individual team. But the main part that was even more, you could just see the passion that she has for it is the Professional Women's Hockey League and the and just the players that she mentioned, the Alina Mueller from the Swiss hockey. She's a Swiss hockey player. And Emma Maltese, who's a Canadian hockey player, is going to be playing with the Toronto team. Alina Mueller is going to be with the Boston team. But so it's great that she's highlighted some of that for our listeners to look out for these teams and individual players, and just to get her and her personal thoughts too, like on her personal accomplishments. It was great.
Yeah, it was really hard not to fangirl while we were talking to her. But she actually has a brilliant hockey mind. Her analysis is spot on. And I am so excited to watch the PWHL after speaking to her. I was excited before, but I'm even more excited now. And I just love the fact that we're going to have the best players from throughout the whole world on these teams, which is going to be great. So it's going to give people a chance to get to know some players that they maybe have not really seen that much. So
No, it's great, and we look forward to having hopefully Cheryl on again. She's a busy lady though,
big time.
Sure. So after this homestand, the Leafs have a few days off before heading to Sweden and the NHL Global Series. And like I said before, maybe this will be a good thing for the Leafs. But Ladies Talking Leafs will be there reporting on our team and the NHL events. Again, don't forget to subscribe and hit that follow button wherever you listen to our show, and on social media, YouTube, X, Instagram, Twitter, X, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Our handle is at LTL1917. And you won't miss any of our road trip reports from Sweden. And also a reminder to leave us a rating or review and let us know what you think of the show. It's easy on Apple and Spotify, and it's important for our show to get exposure as a source for Leafs content. And we thank you for taking the time.
Another way to help us out is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. Find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
And we want to take this time to thank our healthcare workers and first responders for everything that they do.
We thank you as always for listening and watching Ladies Talking Leafs, presented by Bet Online. So till next time, go Leafs, go.
Leafs, go.
Do you believe?
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.